Welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we beat a dead horse 1d6 damage at a time. Today, we dive into a game that can be used for anything with its simple generic rule system. You can apply it to any setting. I am, of course, lying. This is a madman's fever dream that coalesced one night into the vision of a spinning token with a lot of crap on it. We're looking at Glyphs RPG Blueprint on today's System Mastery. Welcome to System Mastery. I am your host, John, and of course, my illustrious other host, Jeff, is here as well.
I like illustrious. I don't know what to do with other, but I'm going to accept it.
The Hi other there. Host.
I'm the other host. I'm also the host.
Hey, Jeff.
Hi.
How you doing?
Oh, dude. It's been great. Except for that except for that all of my attempts to cook Christmas things fell apart.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sad.
Every Christmas dish.
I was so excited about all this. The problem was that I kept trying to make stuff up instead of just, you know, opening up the internet and being like, how I make a chocolate pie.
Yeah, instead of just being like, here's a recipe I know. You're like, I'm going to throw things into a bucket and see what kicks.
You know, that Cajun chicken pot pie is going to come out real good with one quick solution. It was only missing one thing from being perfect.
Cocaine.
It needed a bunch of cocaine. Seriously, a lot of cocaine.
Seriously, though. A liberal dusting.
Well, ultimately, I just needed to read the instructions on phyllo dough so as to learn it takes 5 hours to defrost. So I didn't have to work with fucking Pillsbury biscuits on top. I mean, not that that's bad. Those are fucking tasty. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, I'm getting you wrong.
Yeah, you're going to get me wrong here.
Don't you get me wrong.
But in the future, the filling of that was astonishingly good, and I'm going to make it again very soon because I still have all those Cajun seasonings.
Yeah. A little too spicy.
Well, for you.
Yeah, I'm a spice baby.
Yeah.
I'm baby spice.
I can't cook to your expectations because I don't like mayonnaise.
No, I also don't expect you to.
I know.
When you're like, hey, I'm making this Cajun pot pie, I was like, sweet, that sounds delicious for other people.
Yep, and it certainly would be. And then my chocolate pie was exactly what it should be, which is basically just pudding on a crust.
Yeah.
But the only real gimmick was that I was the one making the pudding, and it wasn't made from like a powder that Bill Cosby endorsed in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still, it tasted exactly like it was supposed to, which is, you know, chocolate pudding pie. And I think you probably needed an additional gimmick, like one more gimmick, and it would have been there.
Yeah.
If I had thrown some
like flavor.
Yeah. Yeah, it tasted like chocolate. Eat a dick.
Yeah, being mean.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right. I got you the best Christmas present you're going to get this year.
It's true.
Listeners, I got John a very, very nice Nicolas Cage zippered pillowcase with a misprinted sentence on it so that it looks like he is saying, it's me, Nicolas Cage. See you in my dreamy.
I did indeed sleep on that last night. Tell you, great sleep.
Yep.
Haven't slept better.
Well, yeah. And plus, you got to see Nicolas Cage in your dreamy.
Yeah. I'll wake up first thing in the morning, and there he is.
It wasn't enough to find a Nick Cage pillowcase. I had to find one that had a blatant misspelling on it.
Now, much as I love our beginning of the show shtick,
mm-hmm.
this book has too much nonsense in it. Like, I assume this is going to go long because this book cannot be really understood. I feel like if someone understood this, it would be like a weird cult situation.
Or just a lie.
I mean, we're talking like Time Cube leveled the RPG.
Yeah, this one was rough. I mean, it starts so promising because it literally starts
with, hey, you need to buy a proprietary token with like 57 different symbols on it.
Rather than that, this book was your pick, and I had never heard of it.
I would like to just state for the record,
yeah,
this was suggested to me
mm-hmm.
by a friend and known friend of the show,
Confidant.
Quinn.
Oh, Quinn, okay.
They showed me several pages from this mm-hmm. On Twitter,
mm-hmm.
and I think it was like the feral arc race,
mm-hmm.
and just the,
which is
like token symbol itself, and I was just, it was maddening.
You know, I'll take it back. The opening pages of the book do not inspire a neat idea or confidence in me. Your very generic description of what I should go get inspired a little bit of confidence, because here's the, at its core, this is kind of the selling premise of the game is, this game is diceless, replacing it instead with a sort of token and carom board situation where you flick a token down a little track onto like a grid with a variety of different potential outcomes and squares and circles and what have you on it.
Yeah, they really wanted to make this book into
a physical challenge.
Like, well, they're like, oh yeah, you can do dexterity mm-hmm. games with this, but, you know, also instead of that, like the randomization is just where the coin goes.
Yeah, because there's all different ways of getting it onto that grid. You can flick it from a little track that comes on each of the two grids, and I think three grids actually in the game, or you can like spin it on top of them like a little top, or you can drop it on the grid from a height. It's all these, it's like, you know, they thought about the various ways that you can interact with flicking a token onto a grid. And that part sounded, in your kind of initial lead-in description to me, that's what the premise of the game is. I was like, oh, that's clever, because that adds a little bit of skill to the game, but just enough randomness to kind of still have some. That'd be neat. And then I saw what the token looks like. And not the grid. The token has, like, 32 different distinct symbols on it, arranged into 8 different categories.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to go ahead and let you know that the token for this has not only basically a D10 on it, it's got a 0 through 9
mm-hmm.
printed around the ring of it. It also has several different lines that are paths. So it'll have like a straight line, a T, like an L shape, an S. And it's just like, oh, if you're determining what a path looks like, mm-hmm. use this.
Yeah, so you can, if you're just like making a dungeon on the fly, you just constantly spin this token and it comes up as like a figure eight occurs, and now you have a figure eight in the path you're walking. Or that's where the chase and the car chase goes, or that's where the deviation of the grenade you threw is.
But they've got the cardinal directions, 4 elemental glyphs,
mm-hmm.
4 states glyphs, which is like particles and waves and lines and clusters.
States glyphs are what the Civil War was about.
Yeah, states glyphs.
Yeah.
There's permutation glyphs.
Mm-hmm.
There are polarity glyphs.
Mm-hmm.
There are function glyphs.
This is on the token, the thing that you flick down the track. That we don't have one. You can buy them, by the way, if you would like one. This game we got, you know, for free on DriveThruRPG. So this is how they get you.
Oh yeah, no, the the fact that this game was like, hey, just download it for free on DriveThruRPG. It's mm-hmm. fine. I was like, oh okay, look at it. Oh, the token itself that you absolutely need to play this is $20.
Yeah.
And that's for one of them. And considering that multiple players are going to be spinning and flicking and dropping this token all the time,
so they're going to bop it.
You gotta have probably at least a couple.
Now there are also 2 different grids upon which to flick or drop or spin the token.
I mean, technically there's one, but with 2 overlays.
Oh, okay, yeah. I guess
it's the exact same grid. It's just, one is numbered like 1 to 26,
mm-hmm.
and then the other one is letters, but in addition to letters, it's also colors.
See, I thought there was the skill/technique grid, and then something else called the Omni grid.
You've got the action grid and the Omni grid, but they're the same shape. They have the same
okay.
loadout,
mm-hmm.
And the numbers are in the same place as the letters/colors are.
Right.
So technically you can just use the one grid, but it means like, oh, a 1 is not just a 1, it's also an A and the color black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's about 20, I think it's 28 distinct colors that you can roll on the chart. They include things like navy blue versus dark blue.
Oh yeah, I mean, you're gonna get things where it's, we've already run out of things like red, blue, green, and so at this point We're like, well, we got magenta and mauve and tan.
Olive, ecru.
Mint green.
Eggshell.
Yeah, it's...
Ocean foam.
It's a bit much.
It's a lot. I mean, and the game kind of has a... I'm going to go
now,
ahead and say
hold on.
It.
I want to say,
fine.
Attached to this grid
is the track.
Is a track that a little bit away from the grid is a molecule symbol.
Yeah, there's a picture of a molecule.
And a little further away from that is what the game refers to as a G, but it kind of looks like someone fucked up the handicap parking space.
Oh, symbol. Yeah. I kind of saw it as sort of a combination between a check mark and a lightning bolt. but anyway, I guess I could see it as a G. It certainly is a cool razor-edged G for the 90s. It's a G with a lot of X in it.
It certainly was.
Now, if you're wondering what those are the two different starting points on the track from which you might flick your token, depending on the severity of difficulty you're facing. Or
the type of action you're doing.
Yeah. And obviously, as you can tell, they're a progressive from easy to hard in the simple track of molecule, letter G.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It really tracks from, you know, this difficulty goes from molecule to G, and I think everyone understands that.
Yeah. I mean,
we finally got rid of those ones where it's like difficult, hard, very hard. No one understands that. Yeah. But when you tell someone it goes from molecule to G, they're like, finally, a simple, understandable system.
Now, it would have been nice. I would have appreciated a little more granularity here if they had included a Ninja Turtle in the middle, because, of course, that's the exact midpoint between molecule and G is Raphael.
Yeah, but, yeah. You know, obviously this is still the 1.0, this get a second edition, we might see that.
Yeah, they'll put in the obvious Ninja Turtle center to that, to that dichotomy.
Now,
and they are also there. It's not just a picture of a molecule and also a picture of a G, which, those are just glyphs for something. And don't worry about it. It just coincidentally looks like those two things. They're called the molecule and the G.
Yes. And again, depending on what you're doing, you'll either, like, if you're flicking it, you have to have your wrist stay on that symbol while you are flicking it, and it can't leave the table while you do it. So it has like a bunch of rules.
Yeah, right off the bat here, I'd like to complain that you can't flick the G. It's way up in there.
Man, whatever this game's like, hey, flick the G. I'm like, you don't understand how this works. outside of the grids and the tokens, the first thing that really grabs your attention in this is the art.
There's a mix of different varieties of art that may be found throughout, but the core art, which I'm sure you're ready, you can sum it up in a word. It's very easy to sum up in a word, and that word is
boobs.
Poser.
It is poser.
It's poser art. It's the book has poser art. You know, it's a free book, so I wasn't going to complain about the art, but. Oh my, they seem to have picked their favorite, and they use her to introduce most of the chapters in the book.
Yeah, they have a sexy white-haired lady in a white corset and white short shorts that is on every single page.
She looks like what would happen if you let players select their own Final Fantasy character colors. They just pick white or black and go all the way to all of them and then turn the boob slider all the way up. She is heavy of breast. What I'm saying is Picard would be into this.
The problem I have with this is normally I would say like, it's some dude making an RPG and he's making all the art and he's doing everything by himself. Okay, I get it. He's just slapping together whatever he can.
Yeah, poser art.
However, when you go to the back of the book and look at about the author, you see that he decides to say, his professional background spans years of graphic design.
Oh, well.
He's a graphic artist and the inventor of the 2D dice.
Wait, the 2D,
the token.
Oh, the token is called the 2D dice?
He has an entire 2D dice thing where you can buy a token that instead of all of these glyphs and nonsense has like around the middle is 1 through 4. So you can do a D4 and then through 6, you can do a D6 all the way up through 20 along the outside rim.
Well, I mean, I was a layout and graphic artist for a few years myself and I can't draw a lady. I'll be very honest, because mostly if you're doing graphic design for work, it's logos. You're just making little logos and doing text shit.
Yeah, but I also wouldn't put in my author section that I wrote myself. I'm a graphic designer, and you can really tell. He mentions it twice.
I mean, this is gonna be the rare, very, very rare occasion of this book where I'm gonna go to bat for the guy.
Oh, I'm not.
I was a graphic designer for like 5 years, and I can't draw to save my life. I can graphic design, which
yes,
means,
but he says he's a graphic artist.
Okay, I guess that's a difference. Fair enough. As a graphic designer, my primary ability was to Google the picture I need and then mess with it enough that it's not the same picture and then give it to my boss and then complain.
Yes. About my boss.
Mm-hmm.
To my boss.
Yeah, yeah. But I'd say, this boss I know. And he'd be like, yeah, checks out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no, that boss.
Definitely not me.
Definitely a boss.
That sounds like a boss I'm not, he'd say.
He definitely says.
Mm-hmm. So
the game purports to be a universal system.
Mm-hmm.
It is supposed to be a game where you can play it in anything.
Mm-hmm.
It goes in any setting. They're like, you can do fantasy or sci-fi or kung fu beat 'em ups, whatever you want. It's all available here at Glyphs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, here's our races. You can be a cat girl. I'm like, wait a minute, hold on.
Okay, well, let's... I want to start with something I found pretty fascinating with this book, which is that it seems to be presented in reverse order from what it should be. Character creation in this book is chapter 12.
Yes.
For some reason, character creation is sandwiched between a list of skills and a list of powers. That is where you will find character creation.
It's worse than that.
Yeah.
It's sandwiched between your polarity.
Your alignment, basically.
And the combat system.
But the book seems to be presented backwards, such that when you're looking through these races, and then shortly after that, the archetypes that you can play as, it presents a variety of dazzling and confusing concepts that it will not explain for hundreds of pages. Because this book is enormous.
Because you start looking at something, and it's like, oh, well, of course, these weapons you have do a T3 damage.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, what does a T3 mean? Don't worry about it. Anyway, you also have 12 BUs. I'm sorry, you need to stop and tell me what's happening in this game.
Could you please explain to me why my cat girl character I built has an endoskeleton of 2 LHP? what does that do?
Oh, don't worry about that.
As far as I can tell, LHP stands for life, health, points.
Yes.
Which
he didn't want to do hit points because that's passe.
Yeah.
So he put an L there.
Yeah, he put an L in front. And then he said life health points, even though those are just synonyms.
Yep.
Well,
because he also has AHP for armor health points. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, the health of your armor points.
Okay, that makes sense. Now it makes a lot more sense. He could have just put LP for life points and AP for armor points. He had to include the word health in both.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
Reasons.
Because HP. I don't want to be the standard that everyone else is.
But I need HP to exist in the word anyway.
But otherwise, people aren't going to know what I'm talking about.
They should be LHPN for life hit points numbers.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're life health points numbers. Excuse me.
Sorry.
That would be a lot more cohesive. This is another thing you'll find as you make your way through the book, is that this guy has... I'm going to go ahead and say a Gygaxian tendency towards using a big word when a small one would do, often to his detriment, as he clearly does not know what the big word means.
Yeah. I mean, again, honestly, you go to the back of this book, you look at this guy, you look at his about the author, and you're like, yeah, I get it. No, I get it.
I mean, just as an example, one of my favorite things I found in the book is a part that is... there's a list of superpowers, because obviously you have to be able to play as a superpowered person, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to use this game for anything.
Exactly.
One of the first superpower in the list is the very basic, very famous superpower of flight,
mm-hmm.
Which in this game grants you the ability to move freely through aerospace, which, sure, I mean, I guess if you wanted to use a bigger word than the air or the sky or just...
Or even just airspace?
This gives you airspace or the ability to fly. All these things would have been fine. But instead he said aerospace. Now, I know that sounds right, so when you read through, you're like, yeah, okay, whatever, you can keep going. After all, you've read a lot of big words getting here. Why stop now? But aerospace doesn't mean the sky. It means the industry of getting people into the air.
Yeah.
Which means you can, like, move freely through Boeing or the Wright brothers.
Yes, indeed.
And this is common throughout. That's just my favorite.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in this.
Okay, so the races, as John was mentioning, they are human, elf, dwarf, cat girl,
and Demon
of the Bay.
Damon.
So a guy named Damon.
Yeah. And Damon.
Hi. My real name's Ted. Don't tell anyone. I want to fit in at the goth club.
Yeah, you get... Those are your, what is known as, primal race types.
Mm-hmm.
Now, primal race types, they are the ones that are, you know, like human and so on, where you're like, oh, you might have a little bit of a difference between these various things, but they're not, you know, superpowered in and of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Most of your abilities are going to come from whatever archetype you choose in this game.
Yeah.
But then there are also deviant race types.
Mm-hmm.
And just reading the word deviant race type made
me
very uncomfortable.
Yeah, there's a moment where you're like, okay, which one's it going to be? Is it going to be a bunch of stuff about lifestyle choices he doesn't approve of?
Or what is this, Italians?
We're going to do a... They know what they did and continue to do.
Deviants.
Or it could be about the bad guys from old Marvel stuff.
But instead, this is where your sort of generically magical types of things go. So it's got a merman or a cyborg or a vampire,
mm-hmm.
a werewolf or a serpentian.
Yeah, including one of my favorite phrases in the book, which was like serpentian. What was it? Attachments or lengths or something?
Oh, endowments.
So thank you. Serpentian endowments.
The serpentian, as we all know, is a bipedal snake man that has two snakes coming out of his armpits. Now, that's just a common thing that you would see along with vampires and werewolves.
There are two snakes inside you.
One snake is in your armpit. The other snake is in your other armpit. You are a serpentian.
Serpentian endowment sounds like the sort of thing where it's a CD of soft jazz that you can buy at Target. It's on that kiosk where you can press a button and a polite lady's voice goes, Serpentian endowments.
See, I was just thinking Serpentian sounds like the worst knight.
Oh, yeah,
I am Serpentian.
I have no arms or legs.
I have these snakes, you know.
Hiss.
Hiss, my good man.
Oh, you supercilious serpent. Okay, so deviants are the good races to play as, basically. They have a downside to them, however. They include vampire, serpentian, merman,
yeah.
A few others. Cyborg, I think, is one of them.
Yeah, I already mentioned all of them.
Okay, and the downside to them is that you are automatically considered to be multi-classed if you're playing as one, because you're forced to take your first class, well, archetype, excuse me, because this game is a classless system. It just has archetypes, which are classes. Your first archetype is forced to be Marvel, which is normally the superpower one, except you don't get any of the benefits from it. So really,
you just don't get any of the ability to take the powers or skills.
Yeah, you don't get the powers or skills, but you do get the weapon proficiencies and stuff.
Yeah.
But effectively, what it means is it forces you to take
another thing,
and then earn half XP on both of them, because of how powerful your starting race is.
The thing is,
this is not true.
Yeah, I was going to say, it just says you have to pick Marvel as your dominant archetype,
mm-hmm.
and then you can pick something else. But the thing is, the game heavily suggests that you should have a dual archetype character regardless of what you are,
mm-hmm.
because that's how you make the unique classes.
Yes.
So if you were to take like priest and warrior, well, now you've got a paladin, baby.
Yeah. And if you were to instead combine martial artist and commoner, well, now you've made a brawler, my friend. Except, you know, those are the only two examples it gives you. It wants you to make up the rest for yourself, and that's fine. It says for the deviant archetypes, if you pick one and you would like to be a superpowered one, you have to take...
You're a Marvel/Marvel.
Yeah, you have to take Marvel again as your secondary to get access to the power buttons. Now, the races look highly imbalanced when you first look at them, because they have like four stats, and each of them ranges from like poor to refined, but those are just the senses.
Yeah, so
the game of course has a whole chapter called the four senses.
Each race, you get a level 1 to 4 in sight, hearing, smell, and taste.
Mm-hmm.
It tells you what type of tissue, skeleton, and vitals you have.
Mm-hmm. Now note that for almost all of them, it's just, you know, tissue, normal,
organic,
skeleton,
endoskeleton. Vitals, biological.
Yeah, the only way you have to be a cyborg to not get an endoskeleton. The cyborg is the other only one that ain't got no motherfucking endo.
He's got an organic endo biological, the same as everyone else. You just have the option of changing it.
Yeah.
Now you also get technically a thing where it's like your affinities, and it tells you what archetypes are generally done with this thing.
It's got nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, it's not like you get a benefit by going through your affinity.
Mm-hmm.
It just tells you, I don't know, maybe play this.
Notably, when I was, because this is the kind of game where it was so confusing and complicated that we both had to make our characters before this.
Oh yeah, we've already done our bonus content.
I kind of
patreon.com/systemmastery. Go there, you'll hear the characters that we have already made in this absolute brain fuck of a game where I have written 2 full pages of stats.
Yeah, I wanted to make a rogue in it. None of the races favor rogue.
No,
so I was like, oh no, that's not good. Why is that? And then it turned out, who gives a shit? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if your affinity is too rogue.
If there was any one recurring theme throughout this game, it would be who gives a shit. It doesn't matter, because most of the subsystems of this game don't interact or correlate with each other in any kind of way.
Not really. Now, if you are a deviant race type, you also automatically get a weakness. Because that's basically a thing that comes with Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
But because you're automatically a Marvel, all of them have a thing. So, like, vampire weak to sunlight, werewolf weak to silver, and so on.
Yeah.
But then everyone has whatever your movement is. You get the most important thing, which is what category your prime attributes are under.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Because there are 4 ranks of attributes, which would sound like they go from low to high, but they don't because they're kind of mixed around. This is so confusing. There are, you can be an animal, a people,
wild, even.
Even.
Augment or epic.
Yes, which basically amounts to animal, people, cyborg, god, more or less. Although there are other ways to get to augment, like you could have magical augmentations or whatever. But basically that's what they boil down to. But here's the thing. There are 3 categories of stats, and you're not going to get... you're learning this in Chapter 2, where you're learning about these race types, they're called. You won't see stats until Chapter 11 or 10 or something like that. So it'll take a while before any of this means anything.
Well, yeah, because you look at it and you're like, physique, epic. Or you're like, oh, I guess that's what it is. I just have an epic physique.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, no. Physique actually goes with 2 stats, and then there's 3 substats within it. Now, those stats, of course, will correlate to some attribute modifiers that you'll also make based on those stats and substats.
Yeah, so if you're wondering how many stats are in this game, there are 3 core stats, 6 creative stats, 9 expressive stats, and 11 substat derived substats.
Yep.
So, you know, that's that's truth. Okay, so yeah.
Then each race has their own perk.
Mm-hmm. So the perk is just a +1 to one of the stats. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
No.
That's the race bonus.
Yeah. That's
an archetype bonus.
Race perk is, if you're one of the primal ones, it gives you some good thing that you are good at, and if you are a deviant, instead you have what are known as endowments, which you pick 3 out of a list of 5 superpowers to have, essentially.
Yes.
So
that's
like,
where Serpentian endowments comes from. It's not just a Guns N' Roses song.
No. So you could have like, oh, I've got the ability to spit venom, or I have chameleon skin as a Serpentian, and those would be your endowments.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, like I was trying to explain in the stat grid, you have a number of points to invest in your stats. The grid is, let's say you're making a human. That means you're using the even stat track for all 3 of your stats. In fact, that's the case for almost everybody who isn't one of the deviant archetypes. And the way it works is you look at the grid, and even is on the 2nd height for the physique and intellect categories, and on the 3rd tier for the willpower and force category. So if you put 2 points into that, you multiply it. No, I'm sorry. They're on the 1st tier for strength and intellect. So they multiply those by 1. When they're in the 2nd tier,
no,
they
even is x2.
It's x2.
Wild is the x1 for intellect because you're an animal.
Oh, right. Okay. I forgot about this. Because I made my character a feral and not a human, which is why they have a wild for their starting strength.
Yes.
Okay.
So the whole thing is you look at whatever it said for your race type, whether it was, you know, wild, even, epic, whatever. When you get to the point where you actually are making your character, you know, 10 chapters later, you look at the thing that says, all right, what are you? All right, I'm looking at strength. Okay, I'm a human. I'm a times one strength. So I just, I'm a 1 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm wild, I'm times two.
Well, so you're technically a 0 to 4. You're allowed to have a 0.
Oh, yeah. You can put
stat.
0 points into a stat if you want to, but then you are bad.
It will laugh at you. You'll because this book, in the stat section, it has those examples where, you know how some, you know, especially in White Wolf games, they'll be like, what if you have 1 dot in strength? And then it just kind of makes fun of you.
Well, because you're a dumb idiot.
Yeah, and then if you put 5 dots in strength, it's like, you could throw a car through another car.
You're, yeah.
Or, you know, they do the... You have the strength of a peak Olympian. You have the mental deductiveness of a Sherlock Holmes. But in this one, it's 0 is always, you're a stupid dump. And then 5 is always, you are 5 times as smart as a 1.
Yeah, the weird thing for me in this is they have the whole x2, x3, x4. And when you look at it, instead of it being, oh, you know, what's a level 3 when you're x4? Well, you know, normally level 3 for someone that's x1 is 3,
mm-hmm.
but I have an effect of 12 in it. What does that mean? You are 4 times as powerful as a human that is a level 3. And you're like, shut up.
Why did you put examples here?
This doesn't need an example. That's just literally what the numbers are.
This would be like if you just showed someone a list of numbers and 4 was like, example, 2 plus 2.
What does a 5 mean in this game? Well, it's like if you were a 3, but you added plus 2. No, fuck you.
Oh, thank you. That was a worthwhile use of page.
So, yes, you will get all of your race nonsense. This game, of course, because it wants to be everything, has a lot of non-required subsystems, so it also has a sustenance subsystem.
Oh, God, yes. There are things in this game that have stats that I've never seen a game have stats for before. Sustenance is simple enough. It's pretty much when they were making fun of
how often do you need to eat?
Yeah.
How often do you need to be in shelter? How often do you need to rest?
Yeah. And certain races are better at, like, elves only need like 4 hours of sleep a night, whereas cat girls or ferals, as they're called, do not require shelter at any time and can always be wherever.
Yeah. And then there are optional rules for, oh, well, if you haven't eaten your sustenance level in a day, then you acquire a -1 penalty to whatever.
Yeah, and obviously that's because you're supposed to play this game as one of them hex grid crawl through the wilderness type things, where you're like, all right, now you walk this distance, and you flip the die, the token thing, and you're like, in a squiggly fashion, and then you encounter, roll the spin the die, carbon, a baby.
Carbon, a baby.
Oh, carbon is earth. This game has the standard four elements that, you know.
Yeah,
it's
air, fire, water, and carbon.
Yeah.
Obviously.
So
that's your race. Your archetype is, standard fantasy classes.
It's a new kind of art, though, that's for sure, because all of a sudden we switch from poser art to...
Still poser art?
Stick figures?
Oh no, the symbol for them.
Well,
yes,
because they have there's a periodic table of archetypes. They start with the center line of it, which is Warofi Buau, or warrior, rogue, fighter, butcher, or outlander. Butcher is just berserker. Outlander is just ranged archer guy.
Yeah, you've got warrior, fighter, rogue, fighter, monk, butcher, barbarian, outlander, ranger. Congratulations. Uh-huh. Except it says, oh, you may think it's that, but also you can use guns?
Yeah.
Like, that didn't make it a new class.
It just changes ranger to ranged. You just change the R to a D. Great. Okay, then there's the 6 magic classes you can play as. Marvel, superhero, priest, magus.
Wizard.
Sorcerer, witch is witch. It's fine. It's just, it's like the ritual
class. It's debuff.
Yeah, and summoner. Enchanter/summoner. And then finally, 4 other classes that are called the soft classes.
The supportive archetypes.
Supportive archetypes, which are scholar, engineer, administrator, and commoner. And administrator is what it sounds like. It's like if you're... it's like bureaucrat, basically.
The thing that everyone gets in choosing an archetype is it lets you know what type of weapons you can use, what type of armor you can use, whether or not you can dual wield and how big of a weapon you can dual wield, what kind of special skills or powers you have, and then a modifier bonus to one of your stats. Now, if you pick one of the support skill people, you get two bonuses to your modifiers instead of a plus one, which the all the other ones get, because you're garbage.
Yeah, you are absolute trash. The only one that's any good at all is the commoner, because his whole trick is that if he apprentices or squires himself to another class and then stays with them through four level or grid acquisitions.
Well, it's if they have a level four in a skill or talent.
A skill that is exclusive to that that archetype, then he can learn it from them. So he has an ability to copy exclusive archetype bonuses from other people.
Yeah, he can learn, you know, if you're a commoner, he doesn't have any start of game special skills or powers or anything. He starts out as just a garbage dump idiot, but he has the potential to learn anything.
I think my favorite piece of poser art in this section, I know you have one as well, but my favorite one is the administrator, which looks like if someone took Tom Cruise and punched him into Nathan Fillion. Like, literally tried to sculpt a Nathan Fillion out of a Tom Cruise with punches, and then gave him a glass of blood because he's supposed to be a vampire, but also gave the blood some, like, macchiato foam. Not sure what's going on there. Plus, he's on an old cell phone, and it's great. It looks like he's talking to a glasses case.
No, the 100% best picture is the Magus, which is someone who is wielding a wand that doesn't exist past his thumb, a young child who has put on a beard that he found in a costume department, and he is wearing a cheap Halloween store robe, and he just looks like he's trying to do his best elementary school play.
I'll just leave him alone, John. This is Damon. He's trying to get into the goth club.
Oh, Damon. Bless your heart.
Don't tell anyone. This is a Zan the Destroyer costume. I got it at Target. Oh, my God. So
yes, that'll give you the list of things that you can have. Now, if you want to duel class again, which it's like
strongly encouraged,
if you want to be a like custom type of thing, so if in your world you want to be like the classic Gish, you're like, oh well, I'm a warrior magus or warrior sorcerer, then you take that. Whatever your dominant thing is,
it's the one you choose first,
is the one that tells you all of your arsenal, armor, your dual wielding, your modifier bonus, all that is whatever you picked first, your dominant one. And then your techniques and powers and skills, you can pick from both.
Yes.
But they're both half XP to level.
Yeah, so half XP to level is also the penalty you suffer from being a deviant, because
you have to be
dual. You have to pick two to be a deviant. You can't be like, well, I'll just be a vampire and whatever. Okay, so... So yeah, those are archetypes, and you're technically allowed to take more than two if you want. If you just divide it by the number of archetypes you currently have. So if you want to be like, I'm an administrator, engineer, commoner, that's fine, but you're going to level up your crappy classes very slowly.
Yeah, because this doesn't have levels. It's leveling up each individual skill and power
based on when you use them and a whole variety of other things.
Yeah, and depending on who you used it again, what was the skill value and how hard was it to do it? Were you successful or not? So you have to track every one of your skills and powers individually. And if you are more than one archetype, you also have that.
Yeah. Okay. After that, it jumps right into a section about techniques, which are divvied up by the three types of things you can be. Most of the combat classes just get the warfare technique list, except for the fighter, who gets the special martial arts technique list.
I do love that he decided to name the bare-fisted brawler a fighter in a game where he has basically turned fighter into warrior.
And the fighter's track in the martial arts tree is particularly bad, because the first two powers in it are better at punches and better at kicks. And that starts a thing where each of them are their own little parallel tracks.
Not just for this game. I fucking hate every single game that's like, oh, you can play as the, like, the monk or the martial artist or whatever. Now, of course, normally in this game, anyone who tries to punch or kick without being one of these, it's garbage. So we have to give you a thing that makes it not garbage. However, that counts as one of your powers.
Yep.
I'm like, no. No. Yeah, you can't just take a power selection away from me and say, but now you can be as good at hitting as a normal guy who also got something else.
Historically, RPGs have hated the concept of the bare knuckles brawler and get it wrong every single time. It's been the case in most D&Ds and so on. Even one of my old fan favorites, Ninjas and Super Spies, gives your character a wide variety of martial arts moves you can do every turn. You get a big list to choose from. But there's no difference between them except how much damage they do, so no one in Ninjas and Super Spies has ever punched anyone else, because kicks do more damage.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're done with your big, muscly legs.
The worst thing for me is looking at some of these where, like, one of the martial arts things you can have is the kip up. Mm-hmm. So it's that whole, I just, you know, kick myself up to standing from lying on the ground.
Yeah.
You see that a lot. In, you know, martial arts, wrestling, anything like that.
Yeah.
But in order to take it, you need to have taken escape throw. Now, of course, in order to take escape throw, you needed to take escape hold. Now, in order to take escape hold, you needed to take grappling.
Yeah.
So by the time you get the ability to jump to your feet, you've already had to buy three other powers.
Uh-huh. At which point you're strong enough that you're probably not getting knocked down, so what's going on? But, you know, it's... Okay, the other four fighting classes all pick from the same grouping of skills called warfare. There's not much difference between them, and it means that really when you're picking these classes and which one you'd like to play, you should take the one that gives you the most access to arms and armor, because they all are picking from the same field of techniques.
Yeah, it's it's kind of silly.
Uh-huh.
I mean, unless the plus one you get from Rogue is that much more important to you than the plus one you get from a warrior...
Yeah, the only other difference between them is access to an exclusive skill list.
Yes. So every archetype has exclusive skills that they can go to.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
hang on. We're not quite done with archetype or techniques yet, though.
The techniques, once you get to the supporty boys, is just soft skills.
They're called soft skills, and all they are is meta skill adjustments. There are things like, if you take this technique, once per day you can get a -2 to doing an administrator style skill.
It's almost entirely like, what is this? If you're doing a survival lifestyle skill, it's reduced by 2 difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's this? If you're doing a drive skill, it's reduced by 2 difficulty. All right, and if you're doing a social skill, it's... Okay, I get it. I get that all of these just reduce difficulty.
Yeah, they're very, very simple. The only one that really kind of breaks out of that mold is the engineer, because they have a lot of, like, building shit tricks. But even then, that's mostly tied up in the skill system and not the technique system.
No, the soft skills are almost across the board, just that.
Yep.
And then the occasional thing where it's like, you can slap someone on the ass and they get a few ether points back.
And a few of them also relate to the game's core resolution mechanic, which is, you know, the track flicking. Because there'll be things like, you can take a practice flick, and if the practice flick is something you want, then you can say it counts as your real flick.
Yeah, because every time you would do a flick in this, you are allowed a practice, but it doesn't count for anything. But ooh, baby, if you're one of these guys, you can take it.
Yeah, you can flick your practice flick, and then if it's a good flick, you can be like, that's my flick.
You're just basically, what does this mean? It means I get an extra chance.
And they also,
it's just extra chance the skill.
Yeah, so basically all the flick manipulation is tied up in these soft skills as well. It'll be things like, there's an optional rule that we strongly encourage, which is a 5-second rule for flicks, which is that once it's your turn to flick, you have 5 seconds to do it per flick you have to do. And if you have this one soft skill technique adjustment from the administrator support type classes, it's double that. So you get 10 seconds per flick instead of 5 seconds. So basically you choose these classes if you don't want to have a strong impact on the game, but you do want to be good at your crappy impact on the game.
Yeah. You picked something and you're like, ooh, when he calls for me to make a skill flick,
mm-hmm.
I'm there, baby.
Yeah, it's kind of like saying, like ranking up and being really good at riding a bike that has training wheels. You're like, I'm the best at training wheels. And you're like, can you just take them off? No, this is my chosen discipline.
Yeah, because, you know, you're looking around, you're like, oh, that guy is super great at murdering people with guns, and this other dude has turned someone into a frog, but
man, if we have to make camp, my tent is going to be immaculate, let me tell you.
So, okay. Then there are six more, because so far all we've seen is warfare, martial arts, soft skills. Then, when you get to the wizard types, all of them get their own tracks. So there's an...
you don't... A magus and a sorcerer? Oh, no. Those are two different types of powers.
Yep. Sweet. So they all get their own technique tracks to choose from, but they're not called techniques. They're called powers.
Yeah.
Because they get powers instead of techniques. For God's sake. Okay. Now, after all of those are selected, and each one of those has an EP... okay. I'm trying to figure
out... You know what? Let me try and help you out here.
Okay. All right. There's so many layers, John. Layers. Grands flaky biscuits.
All of these powers have levels.
Mm-hmm. They have ranks 1 through 3.
And depending on the rank you have, it will change the effectiveness of it. But in addition to that, you also pay ether points, which we haven't mentioned. It is the mana of this game, but everyone uses it. So if I want to use a technique as a warrior, I'm still using ether points to do my cool shooting trick, as, you know, a wizard who is trying to summon a little imp is also using ether points.
Now, notably, ether points are derived from the size of your character, like the actual physical height of your character, and the multiplied by the power level that the game is set at.
Well, it's... It is your ether point value for your race multiplied by your size. Then you take that and you multiply it by 2.
Well, if that's the power level of the game. That's the last one, is multiplied by the power level of the game.
No, because that's the base.
That's the base. And then times 3 if you're at the second power tier again.
Yeah.
Which means notably that most people are going to be playing man-sized things, because the only race that isn't man-sized is dwarf, and its powers counts as man-sized. So... that means everyone starts with the exact same number of these things, and it is a big number. Most skills, like when I was building my character, the most expensive thing I had cost 20 EHPs per day. Yeah. My character had 576 EHPs, and it's not like I built for them. That's the baseline.
No, you look at a thing and you're like, what does this cost? Oh, it's 10 EP. Okay, sure, who gives a shit?
Yeah, so, but EHP recovery is exceedingly important. It's decided by a variety of factors, including how comfortable you are, whether or not you like the food you're eating that night, and another thing, which we will get to after we talk about skills, that is my favorite thing in the entire book.
Yeah, I mean, we're 45 minutes into this. Like I said, this is going to be a while.
It's fine. It's okay. You want to make it a two-parter?
I don't.
Because we could easily make it a two-parter.
And
it would make it mean we don't have to do any more reading throughout the Christmas season. But sure, we'll keep pushing as if it's just going to be a big, long episode.
I tell you what,
if
we manage to get to an hour and we're still basically on skills, sure, we'll cut it there.
Yeah, all right, here we go. So, skills. Oh my God, skills. Skills are divided into exclusive and lifestyle. Exclusive skills are determined by your career or archetype track choices. You get access to both or however many archetypes you've chosen.
If I picked warrior, like I'm just making a straight up swords guy and he's in armor, then you get to pick from the warrior specific skill list, in addition to the lifestyle skills, which is open to everyone.
Yeah. Now, a lot of these skills are absolutely wacky. Some of them are really great, especially in the exclusive tracks. This is the one part of the game where I really enjoyed it. There's a butcher skill in particular that I found particularly enjoyable called Spatter. Butchers are supposed to be... They're basically barbarians. They swing big weapons and they're scary, right? Spatter is, if you get any of the enemy's blood on you, you regain some of your EP.
Now, when you look at that, initially reading through this, because, of course, this is before you've learned anything about how this game works.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I guess that just gets, what, adjudicated by the GM? Oh, no. There's an entire set of rules on whether or not blood spatters and the direction it goes. So don't you worry about that, my friend.
Also, climb mountains, climb building, and climb trees are three discrete skills.
Yeah.
There's a whole section of how all the skills just get a one sentence description, which is just enough for them to be stupid in certain situations. Like team sports skill description is your ability to participate in team sports.
Yeah. Great.
Thanks.
All skills go level 1 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
If you put any points in it, otherwise you're just untrained.
This is the whole grid thing.
Now, good Lord. Okay.
We haven't gone far enough into the grids at all.
The way that the skill system resolution works, there are 6 levels of difficulty. So when you start out, you're going to go anywhere from simple up to monumental for your skill set.
Yep.
Now, you cross-reference the chart of simple, moderate, worthy, and so on with what rank you have, 0 through 5. Then it will tell you how many times you have to slide a token within a certain time frame within a certain section of the grid.
Yeah, because the grid has a hexagon outside of a square, outside of a circle, is the core like shapes of the grid. So it'll say like you have to slide a token and land it inside the circle, which means you have to get it to the middle of the grid.
Yeah, so, you know, the circle one is going to be, this is the hardest to get into, mm-hmm. because it's just sort of the bullseye of the entire grid.
Yeah, it's like Frank Zappa music.
Yes, it's the hardest to get into.
It's exceedingly hard to get into.
But if it says, like, the hexagon, mm-hmm. that's pretty much just don't flick it off the table and you're fine.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you have level 5 in something, and it's a simple task, you need to, within 5 seconds, flick the token into the hexagon twice.
Yeah.
If you have no levels in a skill and it is simple, you need to, within 5 seconds, flick it once into the circle.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like the manual dexterity issue is, if you have 5 seconds to do 2 flicks, then you have to go get the thing again and reset it on the thing and flick it. And all of that's part of your time limit, which means it's going to be tricky. Also, who's doing these 5-second measurements? How is that even done?
I mean, I assume
like table
it's,
count.
I assume it's you get out your phone and go to the stopwatch mode and do 5 seconds.
Or do you think it's like when you're playing Beer Fest and everyone at the table just, you know, 5, 4, 3, 2 kind of
no,
thing?
No, I assume given what this game is, it's going to be as precise as possible.
Okay, so we're using a stopwatch to measure 5 seconds.
Yeah. Now that's of course only for the simple to worthy challenges. If you are doing a complex, daunting, or monumental challenge, well, then you get 10 seconds to do it.
Which sounds weird, because it feels like you'd get less time to do the harder stuff, given that that is a skill test and that the difficulties aren't...
Except the difficulty is now just where you have to hit.
Yeah.
Because with a complex, everything up through level 3 is you have to get it in the circle.
Mm-hmm.
But if I have a 0 skill and I'm trying to do a complex action, I have to get it in the circle 4 times in 10 seconds.
Yeah. Okay. So every skill, so this...
But I don't know how to judge something on this, because the level 0 in a simple is 1 slide into the circle.
Mm-hmm.
If I have level 1 in the skill, in 5 seconds, I need to slide it 3 times into the square. The square is not that much bigger than the circle.
No, it's the size of the sides of the circle touch the sides of the square.
Which means, more than anything, it's just the 5 seconds that's going to fuck you, because you're like, I got to get it in there 3 times, as opposed to the one guy who slides in once.
Isn't it 5 seconds per flick and not 5 seconds per total difficulty?
No. All set skill token slides must be done within 5 seconds.
Wow. Okay. Although that, again, could be read either way.
Yeah.
So there's a variety of skills. The book never quite explains this, but about 1 skill in 5 is red on the page. We are fairly convinced that this indicates that this skill has its own special type of difficulty that...
Yeah, normally the other ones are, all right, you know, I want to jump over a thing, and your GM will tell you, all right, you're trying to jump real far, that's a complex action.
Yeah.
But the ones that are red in here are actually given their difficulty based on something. So,
but
like,
notably, like,
if I have the assistant mm-hmm. skill, the difficulty is based on the weight of the instructions.
Oh, John, can you go ahead and tell me what the assistant skill is real quick, just in case people didn't quite hear you say that there's a skill in this game called assistant?
Yes, it's an administrator skill called assistant, and an aide that carries out orders is the entire description of it outside of difficulty is based on the weight of the instructions. I don't know if that means you just create an assistant whole cloth out of the air
no,
to do
it's,
something.
No, it's your ability to be one. You can choose to be a lawyer or an administrator or a like any kind of a diplomat or something, or you can voluntarily put your skill points into being an undersecretary if you would prefer. If you would like to be a pushed around sheep, it's an option for you. Notably, it's a red one for no good reason. Another one I like is under the lifestyle skills, there's a section for like sports and physical expression. And as I mentioned, there's climb mountain, climb building, and climb tree.
There's climb every mountain.
Yeah. Of the three of those different climb skills, climb trees is red. The other two are not, which means this game has a special system for the purposes of tree climbing, but not building climbing.
Yes. God damn it. This fucking game. This game has a skill called Barista.
Yeah.
That's red, and it's your ability to make and mix drinks, because when you make a character, you have to choose two foods and one drink that your character really likes.
If you manage to consume the foods your character likes over the course of an adventuring day, then you gain a bonus to your EP recovery rate for that night's rest.
Yeah, and each food or drink within itself has a flavor level.
Yeah.
Now, this might seem like something that would be in the Guy Fieri RPG.
I mean, I could see it. Kingdom Hearts has the current Kingdom Hearts has a flavor level built into its crafting system, and also the current Pokemon has a whole complex curry manufacturing Pokemon camp engine.
So this has a flavor level. Now, this also ties into your race type's taste level.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have a like garbage palate, like I'm a level one in taste, which is what I think a cyborg has, because they're just like, my tongue is bad because I'm a robo.
I have the robot tongue.
Then it's harder for you to appreciate higher level food. So even if you get a level four food that you eat, because your palate is garbage, you're just like, yeah, whatever, it's food, because you have to spin the token of your level versus the level of food to see how much you get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I can fully convey how much that fucks with my head. When reading this book, it's like, yeah, you ate scone, and you like scones, and now it is time to flip the token based on your level 2 flavor against this level 3 scone.
I mean, let's go ahead and assume, just take it as a neutral state for where this game starts, that when your characters meet an NPC, the game fully expects you to sit there spinning the token over and over and over and over again to determine who the NPC is on the fly.
Well, that is a thing we can get into.
I mean, do you want to? Where are we at?
I mean, we're still in, 57 minutes? About an hour?
I know I have at least another 45 minutes on this. We haven't even started talking about how every weapon in this game comes in four sizes. Or my personal favorite thing of all, which is that ordinary clothes have special stats.
Oh my god.
I will never stop.
No, this game keeps going. Like, we're going to stop here at skills, and if you've got anything else to say about skills, let me know.
I mean, ultimately, one of us is going to have to do our bonus content character for today's discussion, so there's some things. There's some more things to talk about with skills. Skills, again, you get a set number of points to spend on your exclusive skills and a set number of points to spend on your lifestyle skills. A lot of things that feel like they should be over in techniques are actually found in skills. For example, one of the exclusive witch skills is the ability to summon and bind familiars.
Which is weird, because if you're the summoner archetype, that's just your power.
Uh-huh. Like I've been saying a lot of this book feels like you a lot of this book feels like it was written without remembering what was in the previous chapter. We've talked about this before. It's been a while since we did like a Cinnabar or something like that, where it feels like
this is very much
cocaine writing, where it feels like
this is a C.S. McCracken level auteur. I am going to just sit down and pour my genius onto the page, and I need not look back.
Looking back is for chumps. I only look forward. For example, I mean, I know that we're already in an hour and we could potentially keep going and try and finish this. We haven't even told people what the 15 stats and 11 substats of this game are.
Oh, I know.
They haven't even come up. And here's a fun fact that you might like to learn in regards to how they interrelate with skills in this game. They don't!
That's right. There's an entire skill section that is like a bajillion different things that takes forever to do. And then you're like, oh, does this do anything with skills? Oh, no. Skills are an entirely different thing. They don't matter.
Yeah.
If I have a level 5 in, like, picking things up, then it doesn't matter if I have a level 0 strength because I'm not rolling strength.
I'm not going to go into the stats right now because we'll save it for next time, but I will mention that there's an example of stats in practice, which is if you have a low strength, let's evaluate what it would be like to be ordered to do 10 push-ups. And it's like, oh, if you have a strength of 0, then you can't even do the 10 push-ups. You give up after 3, and so on and so forth. There's no point throughout the description where it mentions that there's a whole section of physical and sports skills, one of which is exercise.
Yes.
It just doesn't come up. No. I mean, there's already a mechanic in the game that we were introduced to 11 chapters earlier that gives you a description of how to do how to flick a thing down a table to do a set number of push-ups. And then you're reading your way through the book, and here it is again. In a whole new way.
I do really love that under the lifestyle skills, you can take Daredevil. So that's when you do a daring stunt. Or if you're a rogue, you can take Parkour for when you do a daring stunt. And it's just, my man.
I mean, I'll tell you, we can go with my character first for the bonus content, because I intentionally spent the minimum on skills so I could buy as many of the stupid ones as possible. So my character is just a tour down stupid skill lane. and once again, you can find that by going to our bonus content over at patreon.com/systemmastery. And it's I found all the really funny ones and just layered them together to make my guy.
All right, so we are going to go ahead and take a little break right now.
This is a first, folks. We just finished a whole episode of this fucking show, and we didn't tell you what the stats in the game are because
we didn't tell you the resolution system yet because it has not come up.
Yeah, the combat system is like chapter 16 of this book. So we'll have to see you in 2 weeks with the third episode, or sorry, the second episode.
No, the third episode. We're not making a second episode. Mm-hmm. That's for Ray Liotta.
That's what the Ninja Turtle would have been between. This is the Molecule episode. Coming soon is the G.
So yeah, we will be back in 2 weeks with the thrilling conclusion of the Glyphs RPG. Now, as I had mentioned at the beginning, this is free on DriveThruRPG.
Yeah, go get this. It's free. It's crazy. It's really fun to read.
Take a look at it. If for nothing else, please, please just look at the token and the grid.
Yeah.
So when we are telling you what you're supposed to do, you know how ridiculous this is.
This will be your chance to follow along at home. And honestly, I want a whole bunch of our listeners to go download this free game from DriveThru so that the author of it sees it happen and is like, what the hell? What happened? I want to make a blip in his downloads.
Hey, and if you think that having like a giant oversized slammer from when kids were playing Pogs as your resolution system for every die is cool, you can go to his 2D die website, and for $20, you can get a D4 through D20 token that is different from the token used in this game.
Actually, we're plugging him because we're making fun of his free game.
I'm just saying, okay. If you want to, you can do that.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm
it has
that.
A whole YouTube thing to explain how to use it.
Oh, no, this guy's very of the internet. He's going to come for us, John.
Oh, he's coming for me,
baby. What
if
he breaks thumbs?
Oh, he's going to come for me when he hits that G-spot.
Oh, there's so much to look forward to with this one. I really look forward to doing another whole episode on this.
Thank you so much for joining us. You guys have a wonderful holiday season. Mm-hmm. We will be back 2 weeks, more of this nonsense. But until then, you have a good one.